Hello and welcome to another reading of the Fairfield and Westchester County Business Journals. I'm Mike Eastland, and we'll begin with a front page article from the Monday, May 30th edition of the Fairfield County Business Journal. This article entitled, First Selectman to Sorrow, My Vision for Trumbull Remains Unchanged. First Selectman Vicki Tesoro highlighted her efforts in bringing new business to Trumbull and previewed upcoming endeavors in her annual address to the business community. Held May 11th before an audience of members from the Trumbull Chamber of Commerce and the Bridgeport Regional Business Council in the banquet hall of the Tashua Knolls Golf Course. Trumbull is a wonderful community, and I'm honored and humbled to be the first selectman of this fine town, Tesoro said in her opening remarks. I want to thank you, our businesses, for your investments and your confidence in Trumbull. I thank you for the jobs you create and for the goods and services you provide, for all you give back to the community, and most of all, for your perseverance these last 2 years. Tesoro began the speech by announcing that $1.5 million has been made available to the town for the construction of the Veterans and First Responders Center at Cat's Pond. Construction costs are escalating, and this project is no exception, she noted. What was initially a $3 million project is now a $4.5 million project. Additionally, she noted that Representative Jim Himes, a Democrat of Connecticut, selected the project as the beneficiary of the Member-Driven Community Project Funding Program. Tesoro expressed hope that the program will cover the remaining $3 million of construction and encouraged attendees to talk to Himes about the project. My vision for Trumbull remains unchanged, Tesoro declared. It's a simple vision. Tesoro said that the town is presently in line with that vision, citing strong finances, a robust economy, and students with high achievement. She welcomed several companies arriving in the town in the past year, including Kyber Security, Synergy Healthcare, and Lindquist Supply, and extended a welcome to several healthcare facilities, plus new restaurants like Mariana's Pantry, Echo Restaurant, and Guacamole Mexican Restaurant. She also highlighted the Clean Earth Project, an apparel brand specializing in recycled materials. Next Chapter Books also bore special mention by Tesoro. The bookstore is run by members of the Elite Program, which provides training opportunities to students in Trumbull schools. In addition to the new businesses, Tesoro also was proud of efforts to reclaim empty space. We have continued to focus on underperforming and vacant properties, she said. Over 800,000 square feet of commercial space has been redeveloped and/or reoccupied over the last 5 years. Tesoro highlighted this success by telling the story of the Southern Industrial Commercial Zone. In 2017, the area around Reservoir Avenue was over 60% vacant. She said that the project is now among the most sought after in the town, owing to rezoning that allowed for the construction of numerous luxury housing units. Tesoro also praised the Woodside, a project at the former Henderson Lumberyard, which is now fully occupied. Near there is the River Valley Retirement Community, which she described as a cruise ship on land for the 55 and over set. If you haven't been there, you should go there. It's an amazing place, in fact, she said while adding the joke, I have reservations for my apartment there. Don't tell my husband. On a more serious note, Tesoro noted the arrival of new businesses following the creation of housing developments while pointing to another vacant building in the former industrial zone that went under contract for purchase for use other than housing. This did not take 20 years to turn around, Tesoro declared. It took 5 years of planning, focus, and partnership. Tesoro also called attention to legal victory in cases involving a former UnitedHealthcare property, which will allow for the construction of a $120 million redevelopment project. Focused on individuals over 55, the development at the site is expected to bring the town millions in new tax revenues every year, she said. Downtown revitalization projects, successful charity programs, and ongoing efforts to secure further grants and funding were other highlights of Tesoro's speech. Tesoro also described the town's financial shape as excellent, noting the town's general fund stands at its highest ever recorded, $24.3 million, an increase of 31% since he took office in 2017. Paired with a AA bond rating, she described this as proof of her administration is following a stable and sustainable course and that the town is on the course to a bright, safe future on the basis of good planning and sound economics. Tesoro closed her presentation by thanking those she called responsible for protecting the town. She presented a certificate recognizing the selflessness of the Community Emergency Response Team for service and self-sacrifice through the course of the pandemic, making it possible for Trumbull residents to enjoy the flourishing community. Next up, Arts and Leisure Meets Technology, in the article entitled The Art of Building an E-Commerce Site. One of the newest locally based e-commerce sites to go live is Move Art, created by the Stratford-based artist known by the mononym Voltori as the digital storefront for his paintings. Launched on May 18th, it was created by the artist in what he described as a trial-and-error manner. "I've worked on the website for about a year," he recalled. "It was all a learning curve for me. I constantly stumbled upon obstacles and had to research and teach myself how to overcome them." Voltori taught himself enough about building an e-commerce site that he felt comfortable to premiere MoveArt after an extended beta testing period. Nonetheless, the artist turned entrepreneurs going into a challenging market with his MoveArt site. According to data from WPForms.com, a software company focused on the WordPress platform, there are between 12 million and 24 million e-commerce sites worldwide, but less than 1 million of these websites make more than $1,000 in revenue each year. That is hardly due to a lack of demand. Statista reported that there are 900 million more online buyers in 2021 than there were in 2020. And of course, there is the digital elephant in the room, Amazon. Statista also reported 59% of consumers say they always or often begin their purchases with a trip to Amazon. So what can businesses and entrepreneurs do to ensure their standalone e-commerce site finds online buyers? For starters, it helps to have a thorough understanding of where the new e-commerce site will fit within the digital scheme of things. Starting from fresh, you need to do a lot of research on the buying patterns of your target consumers and the type of marketing that your competitors are doing, said Scott Johnson, president of Brookfield-headquartered Mac Media Group. After looking at the wider environment, the next step is to consider the e-commerce site's goals. You have to think about what you're going to sell and how you want your customers to be able to buy, explained Michael Lowenberg, principal at the new city-based MESH Business Solutions Incorporated. "It's more interesting to think about how customers buy than how you sell, because that's what's really going to make or break your website." Lowenberg noted that it doesn't matter what is being sold because the basic principles of e-commerce span the full online retail spectrum. "I build sites for restaurants selling food that's being delivered, and I build websites for clients who want to sell things, widgets," he said. "What you have to talk about are the products that you have and how you build them, whether they're simple products that you buy something and it stands by itself, or whether that has variations, options to those projects. And that increases the complexity and also the way that the products are displayed on a website about how people buy." In Voltori's case, the reasons why people would want to buy his artwork weighed in his decision on how to present his output for potential purchasing. "I uploaded all of my artwork and showcased them in different environments," Voltori said. "Since everyone's home or office is different and unique, I figured I'd show viewers what my work might look like in different types of room settings. If you look at the website, you can see that. I'm super happy about it." For businesses selling a complex product line, Lowenberg recommended having a website that can accommodate a wide inventory, especially with merchandise with diverse variations. "If you've got a shirt with two sizes and five colors, that's 10 products," he said. "And if it's long and short sleeve, that's 20 products. And then you have five kinds of trim, that's 100 products. And if you've got 10 sizes, that's 1,000 products, and each one of those things is an individual product." With a wider inventory, Lowenberg suggested moving beyond the do-it-yourself aspects of sites like Wix or Shopify and work with someone who understands the mechanisms of building more than just simple products. Of course, there is more to e-commerce than the online store. Rob Kistner, the Gale Ventures Program Manager at Iona College's Heinz Institute in New Rochelle, raised the caution that things can become thorny when the process moves offline. I've seen the real inhibitor to growth for an e-commerce site that's selling anything physical as the fulfillment side of it, said Kistner. Let's say you're selling handmade jewelry and somebody purchases an item. Obviously, you want to make sure you have the item in stock. Are you packaging that up? How is it being wrapped? You have to get it to the post office in a timely manner, and all of the materials used for packaging and shipping those products have a cost associated with them. Kistner sparked the question of whether the e-commerce site owner will need to hire a fulfillment company to handle the packing and shipping if the site takes off in popularity, adding the costs of shipping and handling need to be considered before any sales take place. In terms of selling one piece of jewelry, just how much does it cost to make, pack, and ship? And is the sale of that one piece of jewelry greater than all those expenses put together? He asked. Because if you're just making even or breaking even or making a couple of percentages of a profit margin on that, it's probably not worth it to even do this in the first place. Whereas if you have a good profit margin built into that, then obviously it's worth it. But that requires the foresight to plan out what all of these expenses, including your time, are going to include. Another off-site issue for the e-commerce site owners to consider is getting the site to stand out from the competition. People still search Google for a lot of their products, but the Google search volume is still insane, said Mac Media Group's Johnson. There is the digital marketing stuff, social media, SEO, Google AdWords, Google Display, and you want to drive all of them into your buying pattern. For applicable products that could fit into Amazon's product universe, Johnson recommended setting up a store on that site, noting that even though Amazon's hefty cut on the percentage of sales would dilute any immediate profit rush, it would nonetheless help build brand awareness. I find myself just going to Amazon for the pure convenience of it, he admitted. And then there's the issue of cybersecurity. After all, no one will want to shop on a site where financial data can easily be hacked. Every website should have an SSL certificate that makes it HTTPS, said Loewenberg. Google negatively impacts your search engine result page ranking if you don't have HTTPS. If you're going to give your credit card on a site that doesn't have HTTPS in the URL, I wouldn't do it. And credit card processing needs to be PCI compliant. That's handled by the credit card processors, and they are compliant. They've got security built in. Another financial element to consider involves taxes on items sold from the site. The IRS is really cracking down on general transactions that are in collecting sales tax, said Kistner. For your new business that's just starting up, an e-commerce site, or for somebody that may be starting up a side hustle, that may not be something they want to have to think about. For the artist Volturi, one piece of advice he shared based on his experience in building an e-commerce site was to bring a positive emotional element to the storefront. This is huge. You need to have a love for the product and enjoy the process of creating everything, he said. The reason I say this is because you will come across obstacles, whether business-related or personal. There will be days where you'll want to give up on the project. If you enjoy the process and love your product, you won't give up. But a lot of people do give up because their number one goal when starting is the money, and it shouldn't be. In politics, a new poll finds Lamont outpacing Stefanowski among voters. Governor Ned Lamont is leading his Republican challenger Bob Stefanowski in a 51-43% margin, according to a Quinnipiac University poll tracking how Connecticut voters planned for the November gubernatorial election. While Democrats and Republicans overwhelmingly support their respective parties' candidates, independents are divided, with 47% supporting Lamont and 43% supporting Stefanowski. Lamont has more support from women, 59-35%, while Stefanowski has more backing from men, 52-42%. In terms of likability, 50% of voters have a favorable opinion of Lamont, while 36% have an unfavorable opinion of him, and 11% haven't heard enough about him. With Stefanowski, 37% of voters are favorable, while 22% have an unfavorable opinion, and they haven't heard enough. 38% said they haven't heard enough about him. As for the issues shaping the election, 35% of voters said the economy is the most important issue, followed by taxes at 15% and abortion at 11%. As Lamont seeks a second term as governor, 52% of voters approved of his job performance, while 28% disapproved. 2 years ago, a Quinnipiac poll found Lamont with a 65% approval rating and a 26% disapproval rating. In medical news, Shelton doctor sentenced to 46 months on controlled substance offense. Shelton doctor David Sansomino was sentenced to 46 months of imprisonment, followed by 3 years of supervised release, for illegally distributing prescription medication. He was also ordered to pay a $25,000 fine. Sansomino, a Trumbull resident, was a sole practitioner focused on providing psychiatry and neurologically psychiatry treatments. He was arrested last September on a federal criminal complaint charging him with health care fraud and controlled substances offenses related to the illegal distribution of prescription medication. According to the charges brought against him, Sansomino was under investigation since October of 2000 for providing prescriptions for Adderall and Xanax in exchange for $200 in cash or Venmo payments, usually with little or no medical examination. Many of Sansomino's patients used Medicaid to pay for the prescriptions. Between July 2020 and September 2021, Sansomino deposited approximately $356,000 cash into his bank account. He was charged with making false statements relating to healthcare matters, healthcare fraud, and distribution of controlled substances outside the scope of professional practice and not for legitimate medical purposes. He pleaded guilty to one count of distribution of a controlled substance without a legitimate medical purpose and outside the scope of professional practice. As part of his plea, Sansomino has agreed to forfeit $175,773.45 and surrender his medical license. He was released on a $500,000 bond and is required to report to prison on July 25th. On a brighter note, Connecticut unveils $3 million summer tourism marketing campaign. Governor Ned Lamont announced that the Connecticut Office of Tourism has premiered Find Your Vibe, a $3 million marketing campaign encouraging tourism within the state. According to a press statement from the governor's office, the campaign reflects a more updated, youthful, and holistic view of Connecticut's vibrant culture while focusing on the energy and excitement travelers experience when visiting tourist attractions, hotels, and restaurants, and exploring the state's abundant outdoor offerings. The campaign will run through Labor Day and encompasses broadcast, online, print, and billboard advertising, along with an update to the Connecticut Office of Tourism's website. The campaign will also include advertisement placements on targeted JetBlue flights and on the large digital billboards in the new Moynihan Train Hall in Penn Station in New York City. Connecticut is an exciting place to be that offers all kinds of experiences, and the Find Your Vibe campaign captures that in a way we haven't seen, heard, or felt before, Lamont said. The campaign and website are high on energy and personality and serve as a fantastic introduction or reintroduction to Connecticut for travelers near and far. All of this is great news for Connecticut businesses and the state's economy as we head into the summer months. Finishing up Fairfield County News with a combined story entitled, Report, U.S. Auto Sales in May at Lowest Level of the Year. U.S. auto sales in May are expected to drop to their lowest level of the year, according to the forecast published by Cox Automotive. The newest forecast pointed to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of new vehicle sales in May of 13.1 million, down from April's 14.3 million level, and a steep decline from the 16.9 million level posted in May of 2021. May's sales volume is expected to finish near 1.14 million units, down 9% from the previous month and a 28% drop from 1 year ago. New vehicle sales in May 2021 reached 1.59 million, the second best month of 2021 by volume. Historically, the daily sales pace is higher than in May than in most other months, with spring optimism in the air, thoughts of summer road trips on the horizon, and the buzz of Memorial Day sales, said Charlie Cheeseborough, senior economist at Cox Automotive. But many of the industry's normal patterns have been overturned by tight inventory and the lingering effect of the global pandemic. Cheeseborough also pointed out that in addition to economic challenges, The low sales volume can also be attributed to the calendar. There are 24 selling days this month, 3 fewer than last month and 2 fewer than May of 2021. Moving on to Westchester County news, Westchester retailers among those warned to stop baby formula price gouging. The Business Journal learned from a source that two retail establishments in Westchester were among the more than 30 statewide that were issued warnings by Attorney General Letitia James to stop overcharging for baby formula. The identities of the Westchester retailers and details of their alleged price gouging were not immediately disclosed. James sent cease and desist letters to more than 30 online retailers and brick-and-mortar stores across the state. James ordered these businesses to immediately stop overcharging for baby formula and warned of the legal consequences of price gouging. She said that New York's price gouging statute prohibits merchants from charging excessive prices for essential goods or services during abnormal market disruptions. It's unconscionable that some retailers are taking advantage of the national baby formula shortage while parents are struggling to find food for their children, she said. Amid this crisis, families already have enough to worry about and should not have to worry about being price gouged. We are all warning all retailers that New York will not tolerate price gouging of baby formula, and I encourage anyone who sees this to continue reporting it to my office. As examples of the alleged price gouging, James said that a 19.8-ounce can of Enfamil Nutrimission formula, which typically sells for $44.99, was being sold by an Erie County retailer for $59.99. In the Bronx, a retailer was selling a 32-ounce ready-to-feed bottle of Enfamil NeuroPro for $17.99. It previously had been sold for $11.99. A nationwide shortage of baby formula has resulted in consumers scrambling to find suitable replacement nutrition for their infants. The U.S. military launched an aircraft to bring formula from Europe to the U.S. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration reached an agreement with Abbott Nutrition on the reopening of a formula manufacturing plant in Michigan that had been closed due to contamination, resulting in an estimated 20% loss of baby formula supplies. In the cease and desist letters, James told the retailers that wholesalers and distributors also are prohibited from price gouging, and she advised the retailers to notify her office if they are being overcharged by the wholesalers or distributors with which they deal. James encouraged consumers who observe price gouging to contact her office, reporting the specific increased prices along with dates and places that they saw the increased prices and the type and size of formula being sold. If consumers actually purchased formula at inflated prices, James urged them to provide her office with copies of their sales receipts and photos of the advertised prices. Next up, from contributor David Carey, his article, Housing Crisis or Housing Shortage. Homeowners and potential home buyers are not reliving the 2008 housing market collapse, but there is a housing shortage that is having quite the butterfly effect on the real estate market. Mortgage rates are increasing daily, bidding wars are becoming the norm, and many once qualified homebuyers are being left on the sidelines. As if buying a new home didn't come with enough stress, the shortage has upped the ante on factors like loan qualification, competition, and outright availability. But how exactly does today's housing shortage differ from the 2008 crash? The catalyst of the 2008 crash was the widespread and irresponsible deployment of flimsy loan programs and products, which allowed underqualified borrowers to secure advanced loans. Fueled by low interest rates, easy credit, and insufficient regulation, the housing bubble finally burst and left many homeowners with mortgage payments they could not afford. These homeowners often were forced to default, and the homes became foreclosures, which led to the massive breakdown of the mortgage-backed securities market and the overall economy. In short, the 2008 crisis was caused by unregulated loans and irresponsible lending. There was no real oversight, and the lender-appraiser relationship lacked appraisal independence. The volatility of today's market has a more benign root cause. People are simply not selling their homes as often as they used to, opting instead to renovate or upgrade their existing home. Compound this trend with the pandemic, which nearly eliminated the option to build a custom home due to worldwide lockdowns that slashed the availability of building materials and skyrocketed their prices. Sounds like a word program in a math textbook. When you subtract the ability to build homes and combine it with a drastic decrease in available homes for sale, what do you have left? The answer is an alarming ratio, with buyers far outnumbering sellers. What's the market outlook amid the housing shortage? Not unlike the pandemic, the housing shortage is propelling many people into making life-changing decisions, like moving out of the area to states with lower costs of living. Because the shortage has created a highly competitive seller's market, homeowners that are willing to sell now are often receiving a premium price for their homes. There is no denying that it is a fantastic time to sell, especially if your plan involves moving to states with lower costs of living. Many New York and Connecticut residents are selling their family homes for more than they ever imagined, trading in their northeastern roots for much cheaper, yet likely comparable homes in Texas or South Carolina. Those who are near retirement age are positioned especially well to take advantage of such an opportunity. If a spontaneous move isn't in the cards for you, you're not alone. Perhaps you're ready to sell, but not ready to retire or leave the area. In this case, downsizing to a townhome or condo is a viable option. It's true that homes in multifamily communities are also selling high right now, but these properties have the potential to become income-producing in the future should you choose to move out of the area down the line and rent out your home. Construction loans are also poised to make a comeback, likely sooner than the housing shortage will resolve itself. The lack of housing inventory before the pandemic made building a home a fantastic option, and if you couldn't find what you were looking for, you could build it. Although the supply chain is still recovering and prices are still higher than before, securing a construction loan and building a home could be a great alternative as the industry continues to recover. There's also an important silver lining to remember when considering mortgage rates, housing shortages, and rising prices. All things are relative. When I bought my first home in the 1990s, the mortgage rate was over 9%. Compared to the 5.125% we're seeing today, and compared to the rates of other loans like student loans and car loans, a 5% rate suddenly doesn't seem so staggering. Of course, the speed at which the increases are occurring is alarming, and rates will likely continue to increase throughout the year ahead. But relativity is important in navigating today's unpredictable market. All in all, real estate is an industry in which the value of your assets almost always appreciates over time. A volatile market is always a bit unnerving, but in the end, the best thing potential home buyers can do is find an expert to help them steer through the uncertainty. With an experienced lender in your corner, you can take the home buying process one step at a time and ensure that you're making healthy financial decisions for you and your family. And finally, PODS seeks to establish warehouse facility in Armonk. The National Container Storage and Moving Company, PODS Enterprises, LLC, is seeking approval from the town of North Castle to use a warehouse that's under construction in Armonk as a site for its container operations. PODS currently does not have warehouse locations in Westchester. It has about 230 sites in North America, including in Valley Cottage and Marlboro in the Hudson Valley, Calverton, Hophog, Waynescott, and Melville on Long Island, Jamaica in New York City, and Bristol in Connecticut. Anthony Veneziano, Jr. of the Armonk-based law firm Veneziano & Associates told the North Castle Planning Board that PODS has retained the firm to obtain necessary approvals for the company to use a 71,573-square-foot warehouse that is under construction at 94 Business Park Drive in Armonk. He represented Agro and Brassey LLC and Armonk Fairview LLC when they sought approvals to build the warehouse. The applicant was seeking site approval, wetlands permit, and tree removal permit approvals to demolish the existing motel and the construction of the warehouse with associated off-street parking and landscaping improvements. The plan for the building, the warehouse, called for providing 150 parking spaces at the site. And that's all we have time for today. I'm Mike Eastland, and I've been reading from the Monday, May 30th editions of the Fairfield and Westchester County Business Journals.